afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on station and watching properly for our weekly visit. Greetings to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world, and in particular for those who are having birthdays. We seem to have accumulated a number of those during the last week, and so there are birthdays coming up in my Coast Guard family, and here some on the here on the magical Isle of Vashon, and in even the far reaches of Michigan. Next week, I will be broadcasting from Michigan. I'm going to a gathering of some of my extended family, and I fly out of SeaTac on late Saturday afternoon, and we'll fly through the night to Detroit to rent a car, and drive to a lodge in the outback of Michigan. The name of the lodge is The Shack. I have never been to The Shack before, and so I don't know, other than from the photographs on their website, what it's going to be like. But that's where we're all going to foregather for a number of days to celebrate a birthday, an 80th birthday for a friend who goes all the way back to when I was stationed in Michigan, when I was the commander of Coast Guard people in a good part of the Great Lakes. I'm really looking forward to this trip and to the gathering together of some of my people in a part of the country which was of great significance to me, and it was, in fact, the best shore job that I ever had as the commander of Coast Guard people with my headquarters in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. The medical list, there are surgeries done, there are tests completed, and so for all of Captain Joe's people who are on the medical list, there is great hope that some will be able to leave it in the approved way, which is to be recovered so that they can go back on to full duty. For all of them, steady as she goes. The mission of from the captain's chair is for everyone who joins with me every week live, and who then some are not able to come on with me live, and then therefore they listen when we archive, that you will come away feeling just a little bit better about yourself and about the world in which we live. And so I've made a special effort to capture a couple of reasons why we should all feel just a little bit better about ourselves in this past week. But in particular, one came to me this morning at 0530 this morning. The Andy phone gave me that ding, which says that there is a signal from somebody who is sending me a text message. It's called the Andy phone because it is a gift from my friend Andy, who lives right now in Amsterdam. He is in the houseboat True Love, and he's returning to the Isle, and he will be here before Mariar's big celebration, which is on Sunday, the 3rd of July, from noon until at least 1900, 7 o'clock. It will be out at Point Robinson. And any of Captain Joe's people who are listening to me and who are able to come to that celebration, you will be most welcome at Point Robinson Light Station. There'll be a canopy is going to be erected, and it will be one of the big 40-foot canopies that Doug at the Ace Service Center, which is also where you can go to one of the emergency heads, the Ace Service Center. And Doug will be putting that up on Friday for us to have not only the canopy there in case it should dare to rain, but also tables and chairs for the celebration of my Mary R. We are really looking forward to that. There'll be food and drink and music, and all of it in honor of Mary R. And then that will be followed, of course, by the 4th of July, which will be a big family gathering out at Captain's Quarters. So 5:30 this morning, 5:30 this morning, the Andy phone dinged. And it was a text message from Carolyn, who is one of my Captain Joe's people in the in my Road family. As a reminder, the Road family means that we all live on a private road, and each of us own a piece of it because the road goes right across our property. And because we all own a piece of it, we all also own the responsibility to take care of it. And the Road family has been a part of my life, in particular since Mary R.'s death, because they were the first ones in the house as soon as the aid car was sighted going into my house, into my driveway. People from the road started to come in to offer love and support, and that love and support has continued. So Carolyn sent a signal, and the signal said that there was a humpback whale had been sighted off of our in the federal anchorage. There are no ships in the federal anchorage, but there was this morning a humpback whale. Now, humpbacks do not normally come down here, and it was either a navigational error on the part of this whale, or I have chosen to believe that this was a mission on purpose, and that this whale had come down here to remind all of us of the majesty of creation, and to remind us that there are things that we can be paying attention to besides the incredible amount of dross that surrounds all of us day after day after day. And so this whale has, checked it out myself and could not see him or her. But I know that Carolyn is a reliable reporter, and that, in fact, this whale has been with us. And that was its purpose in coming here, was to give us that reminder that there are things about which we should be concerned besides the terrible things that are going on all around us in the world. Another thing that happened in the last Sunday, I have started giving tours out at Point Robinson Light. And I particularly like to have children, and of the children, I particularly like to have small children who are just beginning to find their way in the world. So last Sunday, I had a little boy who was about 3 years old, and he had just come from trawling on the beach at Point Robinson, and he had picked up a crab claw, and he brought the crab claw in for me to inspect and for me to assure him that it was all right for him to take it. And I held out my hand, and he put the crab claw in my hand. He also had a large dog, a large wet dog by this time. And the wet dog came in with the little boy and with his parents. And he plopped himself down on my feet. And my custom with children of this age and this size is to drop down to their level. And so I was down there with this wet dog and holding the crab claw. And I looked at it, and I could see that the hinge was still intact. And so the little boy, the wet dog, and the captain all examined the hinge, and I showed him how the hinge worked, and I showed him that it was possible to use the crab claw to pick up small objects using the hinging. So I always come away from these contacts with children of this age that are just beginning to learn the wonders of the world, feeling that not only is there hope, because I'm a man of always that there is hope, that we're going to get through whatever particular crisis we have managed to immure ourselves in, when we have managed to ground ourselves in Sailor's Talk. And I felt that with this little boy. I don't remember his name. He told me what it was. I don't remember what it was. But he took the claw back and was working the hinge, the two pieces of the claw, working it so that he was now had learned and now was able to pick up small objects with his new acquisition. I don't think the claw is going to last all that long, because he was sure giving it a workout. But it will last long enough for him to have gotten full value for money and to have a good time with it and to pass on to his friends how the crab claw works. Not too long after that, I had a little girl who was also about three. And she came in, and we talked about how the lighthouse works. And this was of interest in particular to her parents. And I said, if you move in a smart and seamanlike fashion and get out on the beach, the tide is still on the ebb, still going out. And so that's going to expose some beach, and you should be able to get some good, shells. And I said, do you have a bag to hold the shells in that you're going to collect? And maybe even some beach glass. No, Captain, I don't have a bag. And I said, well, you're wearing a sweatshirt, and it's got really deep pockets in it. Put your hands in your pockets and show me how deep the pockets are. And she did. And I said, well, there's your bag. You've got those deep pockets. Now, when you go out on the beach, put the shells that you collect into those pockets. And she promised me that she would. And off the family went. They did not have a dog. They had not brought their dog. And maybe they didn't even have a dog. But off they went to the beach. And about an hour later, they returned. And this time the little girl was wearing her jacket, and the pockets clearly were freighted down with many treasures. And she came in, and it was necessary for her to take out every single shell and explain to me from where it came and the significance of it. And she had a pretty good collection, but it was not anything special. The beach is full of what she had collected, and there were no crab claws. I had told her about the young man who had found the crab claw, and that she should keep a good sharp lookout for that. But she didn't find any. But what she did find was a big horse clam shell that had both halves of it. And so I was able to show her how the clamshell was hinged, and how it worked, and how there was a live animal that had lived inside there. All of this is to tell you that there is hope, because there are young people, and not only are they young people who are with us because they are incredibly curious and they want to learn about all sorts of things, but they are the generation which is going to carry on. They're going to pick up the hawser. And they're the ones that we are passing on the good things that we've done and the not so good things. And it is always for me a great thing to have young people come out to the light and to go out onto the beach and to pick up all of these things and then bring them to somebody to talk about them and to then take them home with their beginning of their picture book of memories, filling out the pages in the back section of my own picture book of memories. So whale today, children last week, and then the other thing that happened was that I had a telephone call, and it was a Master Chief Bosun's mate. Master Chief had been one of my unit commanders when I was the commander up in the Sioux, and he is of a Upper Peninsula Michigan family, goes back many, many generations, and he had not heard my broadcast. He doesn't listen to the radio. I'm not so sure he trusts the airwaves, but we had not talked for a long, long time, and he was feeling the need to talk to his captain and make sure that all was well with me and to reassure me that all was well with him. We exchanged, and it turns out that his wife had died not too long before Mary R. And I had not known that. And so we talked about that. And we talked about how we move forward. And he moves back and forth between the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and Florida. And I don't move anywhere from the magical isle except to go on trips and then to come back. So not only was Master Chief one of my unit commanders, somebody who reported to me while we were working together in Sault Ste. Marie, but also a friend. And so it was wonderful to hear from him. And so there's my collection of good things that have happened to your captain over the last week so that I can report to you that there is hope, there is the will, there is a journey, a voyage on my part this week to see other friends from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, family, friends of family rank. And that not only is there hope, but there is the will to carry on and to go out and do good work. And so it is my wish and my hope and my desire and my command that for everyone who is listening today and who will listen to this broadcast as it is archived, reach out and touch fingertips with somebody who might need a little bit of a strengthening message from you. Because I am sending to all of you out there my own strengthening message. Whatever is headed south in your particular world, this is a way that maybe you can reach out and touch somebody that needs your help, and that that will in turn help you. My book today is called Breaking Ice and Breaking Glass. It is a gift from one of Captain Joe's people on the Coast Guard Channel. And Fred had sent this to me. The subtitle of the book is Leading in Uncharted Waters. And the author is Vice Admiral Sandra Stowes, U.S. Coast Guard retired. And Admiral Stowes was the first woman to lead an Armed Forces Service Academy. She was the first woman to be the superintendent of any of the service academies at the Coast Guard Academy in New London, Connecticut. I have not finished reading the book yet. I've got a lot of it to go through. Some of it is a little bit hard going because where I had hoped that there was going to be much more in the way of her own story in the Coast Guard, a lot of it has to do with theory and practice of leadership. I suspect that I'm not going to agree with everything that Admiral Stowes has to say, but one thing that gives her some credibility in my heart and soul is that she was a shipmate of my classmate Captain Joe Smith in Polar Star. And Captain Smith is no longer with us. He has crossed his own bar. I miss him every time I do one of these broadcasts, because he was not only a shipmate, but he was a friend. And he is, and both he and Shirley are now gone, and I miss both of them. But Admiral Stowes, when she came out of the academy, she first went to the Coast Guard cutter Glacier as a junior officer, and then after that, she went to Polar Star. And she came under the somewhat crusty influence of my friend and classmate, Captain Joe Smith. And so I'm hopeful, when I get to that part of her story, that she refers to Captain Smith, because I am very familiar with his leadership style. It was direct. It was much like mine, in the sense that you carry out the mission and you take care of the troops that are entrusted to your care to carry out that mission. He went at it a little bit differently than I did, but the principles were the same, and I hope that Admiral Stowes will reflect on that in her book, and I will report more on that. But I'm recommending the book as one to take a look at, and I'll have more to say about it after I've actually finished it. Yesterday was D-Day. It was the anniversary of D-Day, and I commented on it every year, because D-Day is particularly significant to Coast Guard people, not only because we manned many of the attack transports and the landing craft that made the landings at on the Coast Guard on the U.S. beaches for D-Day, but also because we manned the rescue flotilla that picked up people out of the water all over the landing beaches. We used 83-foot patrol boats that were built particularly for the rescue flotilla, and then went on to serve in the Coast Guard for many years after that. There are lots and lots of people who were alive and who were able then to have their own children and their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren. And I comment on this, that there are many, many people who are alive today and who were alive to have their own children because of the bravery of Coast Guard people in the rescue business. And it did not start with D-Day, but that was a continuation of our traditional work over the years since 1790. And so I always mention D-Day, and D-Day was memorialized for me because when I was in San Francisco for the meeting that I had talked about before on this broadcast, I also took a voyage in Jeremiah O'Brien. And Jeremiah O'Brien was one of the Liberty ships that was at Normandy on D-Day, the 6th of June. And we got underway from Pier 45, which is where her home port is now. She is one of two of the Liberty ships, over 2,500 of them that were built, but she's one of the two that are left. The other one is John Brown in Baltimore. And we got underway. We went out through the Golden Gate, and it was just a glorious day. And it reminded me of D-Day, the 6th of June, and of in particular, the Coast Guard people who were part of that invasion, but not only for the invasion craft, the landing craft, but also for the rescue flotilla, carrying out the same thing that we have done since 1790. And it moved my heart. So I know I've talked a little bit about that before, but since D-Day was yesterday, the D-Day anniversary was yesterday, I bring it up again because it's important to me and I want it to be important to you. It bothers me a lot that we don't talk very much with our young people about the significance of that And it's my hope that maybe this broadcast will motivate some people who listen to me to talk to their children, and in particular to their grandchildren, and if you have them, great-grandchildren, because these are important things that we need to remember. I've talked before about the littoral combat ships, the LCSs, and what a sad story that is in the way of Navy ships. So an update to that is that now the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Gilday, offered testimony at, I believe it was for the budget hearings for the Navy, before the Armed Services Committee, House Armed Services Committee. And he said that we are decommissioning on one end most of the Freedom class of them. They've had all sorts of mechanical problems. And there was at one point somebody was suggesting, well, we'll just give those to the Coast Guard because the Coast Guard takes all sorts of stuff and does good things with them. And I'm hoping that the commandant, the new commandant, will resist that particular effort. So Admiral Gilday, apparently having been told that the Coast Guard's not interested because we are building our own and very incredibly efficient and well-running class of ships in the national security cutters, and soon to build a second class, of which will include the next Ingham, my own Ingham, of course, still being in Key West. And the next Ingham is going to be built in the next couple of years. I hope to be around for her commissioning ceremony because I am the oldest living captain in the present Ingham, and I would certainly accept an invitation to go to the commissioning ceremony for the next Ingham. So anyway, Admiral Gilday apparently has been told the Coast Guard is not interested in any of the Freedom class LCSs. So he said, well, maybe we'll offer them to other navies. I don't know what nation would be hard up enough to take one or more. But let us hope that the Navy has learned from that particular bad experience, that and with the Zumo class of destroyers. That those are two classes of ships, incredibly expensive, and cannot carry out the missions that were originally to be assigned to them. So that's my hope. And now I've come up to the end of my time. It is my hope and my wish and my command that everybody feels just a little bit better after hearing about the whales and about children and all of the good things that I was able to bring to our time together from the captain's chair. This is your Captain Joe. As always, I am up in the captain's chair on station and watching properly. I'm sending out my greetings in particular to all of the far-flung parts of the world that listen to me every week and for which I am enormously grateful. One of the things that is going to happen is that we are starting to build very large wind farms. And I had a note here to comment on that. One is being proposed about 10 nautical miles off of Ocean City. Now, these wind farms do not come without their own challenges, and in particular to the ability for fishing vessels to have the fishing patterns around them change. And they also do provide an elision opportunity as well. You all will remember elisions are collisions with fixed objects by floating objects called ships. All right, here we go. This is your Captain Joe. If you have people for whom you are responsible, take good care of them during the week, and I will be talking to you next week from someplace in the wilds of Michigan. Everybody take care. God bless.